2020 behind you and discover the great offers now available for 211 across the entire range. See nissan.ie.
This is News Talk.
Kamala Harris, the vice presidential nominee, has tweeted in the last 7 minutes, "This race isn't over until every single ballot is counted." And ballot counting is what they continue to do in several states in the US. There's been a lot of focus on Pennsylvania. The governor there, Tom Wolf, though, saying there are 3 million such ballots that they have to get through today, and they might not get through them today. There was a lot of focus on Pennsylvania right throughout the day thus far. Pennsylvania ultimately might not matter if enough other states go the way they appear to be leaning, and only very little lean, I should mention. Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada, possibly Georgia, though Georgia's still a lead for Trump at the moment, but Joe Biden closing in. So listen, as soon as there's any news on any of those states and any calls, big calls in favour of one candidate or the other, we'll bring it to you here on The Hard Shoulder. Joining me to discuss where we are at this point in the race is Matt Mayer, who's the US public policy expert and contributor to The Spectator, and Bob Mulholland, Democratic delegate from California. Matt, you're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder. What is your assessment of where we are now?
We're in no man's land. It looks like Biden's going to eke out a 270, maybe a little bit more victory. But, you know, we just don't know what's left out there and where those are going to break down in terms of percentages that may carry him over in other places. So we're really just in the death wheel waiting for some results to come in at some point.
Is this how you expected it to play out? I know, and a lot of people kind of tearing their hair out over the last 12, 24 hours here, I'm sure, even more so in the United States. But the assessment from people in the know in the days leading up to this was that Donald Trump would be in the lead on the day, and then once all those mail-in ballots were counted, Joe Biden would start to eat into it and possibly pass him out in the states that matter. It looks like that's exactly what's happening.
It does. You know, I predicted a slight Trump win, and it looks like, you know, where that's going to fall would be the blue wall kind of reverts back to the Democrats. So that's not necessarily a surprise. I mean, this is a much closer election than most people thought it was going to be. You know, the media, the pollsters. So it's on many levels, it's kind of fascinating. But yeah, that as the day wears on, the presumption would be those are mail-in ballots that are going to favor Biden versus Trump going forward.
All right, listen, I mentioned Bob Mulholland, the Democratic delegate from California, who's also on the line. Bob, is this race as tight as you expected it to be?
Tighter than I expected, based on the public polls leading up to this. But I'm very happy where we're at now. In fact, if we followed Trump's advice about stop the counting, well, we won. I went to bed behind in Michigan, Wisconsin, and now we're ahead in both those key states. So things are looking very good.
They're looking good, but it is, we're talking about kind of tiny margins of victory. How do you expect this to play out over the coming days?
Well, I think by the end of today, Nevada and Arizona will be announced for Joe Biden, and maybe Michigan and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania, viewers should, or listeners should know, ballots can come in and count it until Friday. And that is where Biden is about over 600,000 behind. But much of the ballots outstanding in Pennsylvania are from Democratic areas. But, you know, if I was a betting person, I wouldn't be betting any money on it. But even without my home state of Pennsylvania, Biden can win.
Matt, I'm looking at Donald Trump's Twitter feed, and it's remarkable. About 3 or 4 tweets in the last 24 hours have been labelled as being contentious and possibly containing misleading information. But he's used the word fraud. He's talked about ballot box stuffing. He's talked about the election being stolen. What's your reaction to that type of language?
No, I mean, it's kind of, it's to be expected from Trump. I mean, that's the stuff he does, you know, and there are some oddities, you know, one ballot update in Michigan had 138,000 votes come in for Biden, 0 for Trump. That's kind of statistically not possible. So there's weird things like that. The stoppage of counting votes that had been already cast in a couple of different states just seems odd. So I think that is playing into Trump's desire to kind of, you know, create the kind of, you know, issues that he has a history of doing, which is to create contention, right?
But are you genuinely worried about those things that stopping votes and some of those figures coming in, or is your point that, look, Donald Trump is going to use these to just maybe undermine the legitimacy of Joe Biden's victory if it plays out that way?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not worried. At the end of the day, you know, when the votes are counted that have been cast, you know, one of them is going to win, and I think that that's going to be a solid result. But to your point, right, I mean, Donald Trump just spent 4 years, you know, having his victory in 2016 questioned nonstop. So does he have a huge interest in doing the same to Biden if Biden wins? Of course. I mean, that's turnabout is fair play, right?
The same question I want to ask Bob. How do you expect, given how close the margin of victory, how tight it's going to be in some of those states, in Michigan and Wisconsin and elsewhere, how do you expect this to play out? Could we see court challenges? Could we see attempts to have some of those ballot boxes thrown out because of question marks over them?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll definitely be court challenges. Both sides are lawyered up to the nth degree. But, you know, Bob may disagree. I don't think the court challenges are going to change any of the fundamental outcomes of the secretaries of states and their boards of elections. I could be wrong, but I doubt that that's going to be the case.
Bob, do you agree?
I believe there will be court challenges, but I do not believe it's going to change the outcome that most the insiders say is going to happen, which is Biden gets a presidential term.
Because you're going to have to kind of verse myself and our listeners here on the relevance of the Supreme Court here, because Donald Trump talked about it in his address yesterday. We will go to the Supreme Court, and immediately the narrative became, oh, he's going to the court that he's after stuffing full of his own appointees, which of course he was perfectly entitled to do as sitting president, to nominate judges to the Supreme Court. But does the Supreme Court have a relevance? Is that the first port of call? How does this work, Bob?
No, most of the legal experts in the media today in America have said there's no grounds to go to the court because there's nothing been decided yet. And we have state laws of 50 states plus D.C., and every one of those laws will be followed to count the ballots. And we all know that, like, for instance, American troops abroad, their ballots will be good for a week. Nobody should be saying their ballots shouldn't be counted. And these states are overwhelmed with the number of mail ballots. COVID-19 drove a lot of people to vote early or mail it in. And we just need to be calm and let the election system to work out. But there's no grounds to go to court.
Matt, does there come a point, if Donald Trump is continuing to question the results over the coming days and talking about court challenges, does there come a point where the elders of the Republican Party, your Mitch McConnells and others, kind of gather in a kind of a dark room and say, enough is enough, Mr. President?
No. I mean, look, if his kids couldn't get him off Twitter...
Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, I have no basis to believe that Mitch McConnell is going to be able to dissuade Trump from exercising his rights to challenge things, right? It may not be – I don't think he's going to change any outcomes, but, you know, he's a candidate. He's put a lot of time and money into it. He has a right to challenge things that seem to be odd if he can validate those. But, again, as with Bob said, I don't think it'll change anything. But the way it'll work is it'll be, you know, district court challenges – appellate courts, Supreme Court ultimately would get involved if it gets that far. So that the Supreme Court is very far off. I think if you go back to 2000, they were about a month after the vote was cast. So it takes time to percolate through the judicial system because you're going to have challenges that have to make their way into that process, so to speak.
Well, look, if they don't have any hope of stopping him, and as you said, look, he has a right. He's after investing all this time and money into running for the office again. He's got a right to challenge the results. Quietly and privately, would Republicans, particularly if they retain control of the Senate, would they kind of just want this to go away and just to get on with governing again?
Establishment Republicans probably for sure, but look, the rank and file are going to believe whatever Trump says. I mean, just like they would on the Democrat side, right? And this is ultimately what's so deeply problematic about this election outcome, regardless of who wins. It's yet another razor edge win by one side that the other side is going to not accept. And we're going to have four more years of red versus blue, which is just not good for America. I mean, it might be okay economic policy, because if the Republicans keep the Senate, it'll be gridlock, which just tends to be good for taxpayers. But for America, it's going to keep us polarized and not united. And that's going to be tough, I think, going forward.
Yeah, Bob, let me ask you the same thing. When you look at that electoral map and how we expect it to get coloured in over the next 6, 12, 24 hours, what does that say about the state of society and the state of division in the United States?
Well, about 70% of the voters are white. And the last time a Democrat for president won the majority of white voters in America was 1964 with President Johnson. So those of us who work in this system understand that the white voters, especially non-college, have not liked the Democratic Party for years. But I will tell your listeners, the system we use, the Electoral College, was designed in the 1700s by slave owners. And for some reason, we've kept it. In our governor races and our Senate races, it's always the person who gets the most votes. But in the case of president, we go state by state. And it's an old system, and it should be eliminated, but it won't be for 100 years, maybe.
Matt, should they get rid of it?
Absolutely not. I mean, that's a misunderstanding of what the point is. It's not an archaic system based on 300 years ago. It's a system that we created that, you know, the House represents the people, the Senate represents the states, and the president is the representative of both. And the way Electoral College works is to say, you know, each state has a say by the electoral votes on the president. So they, you know, so the president who wins the Electoral College is the candidate who wins the popular vote in a majority of states. Mm. That's how it should be. Otherwise, you have states like California, where Bob lives, that, you know, you take California, Massachusetts, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, those five states alone would essentially determine the popular vote every single time. And you'd have nothing but Democrat candidates, even though the other candidate could win 47 states. It wouldn't matter, because the electoral votes in those five in the popular national popular vote model would win the election. So that's why the Electoral College, it's a good system to make sure that all of America has a say and who becomes president.
Bob, if I can go back to something you initially said, the race is tighter than expected. Is that a bit of an indictment then on the candidate?
No, I don't think so. I mean, clearly both candidates were facing a different scenario this election than they thought a year ago with the COVID-19. But it's a reminder to Democratic election people is that most Americans are not interested in hearing discussions about civil rights, transgender rights, all these things which does not affect their lives. And I hope the message is going to get through to, once again, to most Democrat election people. Focus on the American people's lives, which is mostly economic, and now, of course, COVID-19. And hopefully this 100,000 people a day being diagnosed with COVID-19 slows up, but it doesn't appear to be.
Well, listen, I thank you both for your time. Bob Mulholland, the Democratic delegate from California, and Matt Mayer, US public policy expert and contributor to The Spectator. We're going to come back to this story a little bit later with Kermit Roosevelt. What a great name. Kermit is the great-great-grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. He's also a constitutional law expert. So he will explain in a little bit more detail what Bob and Matt touched on there in terms of the challenges we might see to the results over the coming days. A lot of you getting in touch in 53106, like Peter, who says, a vast swathe of people disenfranchised by the media and the PC brigade. That's why Trump gains traction. Latinos and blue-collar workers are his major voters. Many dread the far left and despise the academic elites who seem to control what we say and how we think. I could go on, but the media won't listen. I'm listening, Peter. Anyway, someone else says, disappointing you had no counter debate. Oh, sorry, this is about food waste. I'm going to get to some of that in just a moment. Apologies, Jonathan, I will get to your text. But on Trump for the moment, we were in Florida in December, and when going to an airport, airboat trip, we met a lovely American family. We asked them about Trump, and they told us that employment opportunities were greater, that they were sick of politicians that lied and were corrupt. They were both business owners and said that his tax policies and bringing American business back to America is why they and their friends and family supported him. They were very nice people and intelligent to talk to. They said that mainstream media across the world outside of America are being fed lies because career politicians in America don't want someone like him that speaks weeks as mind in charge, as they can't operate as corrupt as they have been. It was interesting to listen to their point of view. Quite a few people as well texting in to make the quite simple point that they would vote for Donald Trump even though they don't like him, simply because he is pro-life. Joseph texted in along those lines, like Cahill and Cavan as well. So thank you all for your text. 53106, keep them coming. Or you can get me on Twitter at The Hard Shoulder.